search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Welcome, BBCers, to episode number 164 of the Broken by Concept podcast, the number one solitude educational motivational podcast. Today, Curtis Wright have released a video about the preseason and rank changes for next year. Very interesting stuff. Some very hot topics around this. You might have seen this, you might not have. We're just going to react to the first part of this video talking about the new changes for ranked going into next year. So let's get started.
Hey everybody, I'm Jeremy, also known as Riot Brightman.
Hey folks, I'm Andre, also known as Meddler. Today is August 17th, and we've got a lot to cover today.
To start, we want to talk about an update to how we approach ranked each year in League of Legends. We're going to be moving to 3 ranked resets per year. And we want to explain these changes a bit before we hand things over to our game director, Pew Liu, who will talk a bit more about what that entails.
League's had a year-long ranked structure since the early days. Some of the details have changed a bit over time, but the core's been pretty consistent. Ranked kicks off in January, and then runs until just after Worlds in November, at which point we jump to preseason, we experiment with some gameplay changes. Now, there's a lot we think works well about that. There's a great kickoff to the season moment, there's a clear endpoint, game and esport have some nice synergy with each other, that sort of thing. But at this point, we're also seeing some opportunity for improvement. One long, gradual climb over 10 months can feel like a real grind, with a long gap until the fresh climb. There's that down period at the end of the year where often a lot of people will want to play ranked and can't. And sometimes it's just a long time until we've got the next window for larger changes to Summoner's Rift gameplay. It's also often unclear when the next, event or larger update to League is going to be. Now, this year you will have noticed we tried out a faster ranked climb and a mid-year ranked reset. We think that went well overall, and that there's opportunity to create more moments for gameplay changes that can tie in with other things going on in the League ecosystem. So, with all that set up, here's Poo to talk through some more information on these changes.
Hey everyone, I'm Poo.
Alright, do we want to watch Mr. Poo here, or do we want to...
Yeah, let's comment on this first.
I think some comments around why they made these changes were interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so first reaction, Curtis. 3 splits.
That's a massive change. And I think this has a lot of carry-on effects and carry-on effects on everyone's journey, whether or not you're a casual or a hardcore player.
To give some information on what that might look like, so it will be stage 1, the first split, will be starting January 9th. Split 2 will be in May. And then split 3 will be in September. And then that's just going to be ranked throughout the whole year. No breaks at all.
So I think the biggest thing immediately that comes to me is no preseason, basically gone.
So what do we think? Do we think, is having a 6-week, it's like about 6 weeks, right? A 6 weeks break for ranked. The question is that a good thing?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So let's get into this.
Let's do some thought experiments here.
Okay, so I think... Let's list out, we'll talk about, let's do positives and negatives, right? I think let's start with the positives. I think the positives is that it gave people a clear time of the year to learn new champions without feeling like they're missing out on a season. Like I remember the last preseason learning Yone. And I learned a whole champion that would have taken me, did take me a long ass time through preseason. And I felt great about that. I liked that time set aside to learn the champion. I also liked the preseason because you would get to test a lot of some of the new changes that would come out as well, right? So I think there's an element of, gives people a bit of a break, but also I think, having that time to learn new champions is huge. In saying that, though, 6 weeks it's a long time. It's a very, very, very long time. And the overwhelming consensus, we hear from the community is, preseason is useless. It's a waste of time. Don't play. Play another game. Everyone plays WoW, whatever the hell it might be, especially in the esports scene, and then come back later on. So I would say from the wider community, it definitely is not a great move. Negatives, right? It's a very long period of time. It disincentivizes you, even though, yes, your MMR does get changed. It's so minimal because there's going to be basically a reset of MMR, soft reset of MMR anyway, so that disincentivizes people. The quality of the games does seem to be lower in preseason because people just overall care less about their rank. And it's just, there's none of that excitement, you know, when you're climbing the ladder. I feel like a very real part of the entire climb for everyone is climbing to a higher rank, right? People, that is one of the main reasons why people play League. So, anything else that you can think of?
Yeah, I think you've touched on some great points. It's sort of like, is League the game where it's like we want it to be, okay, a 10-month...
Mm.
I mean, you can't even call it a sprint. It's not a sprint. That's a marathon, right? Like, and then like a 6-week rest period. Like, is that necessary in League of Legends?
Is it necessary? You know what I mean? Right.
It's not like this is like gym workout or like a UFC fight where like you've got to go, you have recovery process. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I think it's great to just all around, like, let's say if you have lots of downtime, because isn't it it's like the holiday season, yeah, especially for America, holiday, right? Yeah. For pretty much everyone, like, you know, like Christmas and, you know, you got Thanksgiving, that sort of stuff. I mean, I guess you could argue people do things more, but also gamers, don't we love that time to just play, spend time to ourselves and play League of Legends? So I think it's, I think to just be able to log in on November, like let's say December the 7th, and just want to play hardcore League of Legends, I think it's awesome.
Right.
I think that's...
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean?
I would agree with that. One thing I think I want to say here is that for the average player, right, there is benefits to having one long season, right? Because you have plenty of time to get to that rank that you want without feeling pressured that you're going to miss out. You know, because especially now, I don't really know how hard the resets... hasn't been released, right? How hard the resets are going to be in between split 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I would say it's the same as what's happened this year. So
even now, for an average player, it is significantly harder. Like, if you're not getting a decent amount of games in, right? If you're not getting at least 15 to 20 games in a week, right? For the average player, you're going to struggle to get significant changes in rank, especially from even now in just the 2-split thing, in my opinion, right?
Interesting. Do you think that it's still not enough time?
I think, look, I...
Because remember, Curtis, they brought in the LP
change. There is the LP change.
The LP game, yes, loss thing.
That and is true.
Also, I had many of my people... I mean, I guess... Okay, it's interesting with this specific case study of this year is because Emerald Till got introduced, so we don't know how that's going to look.
We don't really know
until next year. But let's say if you were high platinum last year, right? When you're doing your placements, you were putting platinum, but you're getting like 50 LP. Like, you're basically putting Emerald really quick. Right. Like, I feel like the timing.
You do climb faster in League now than ever.
I think you only need something like... we're based bad case studies because we have to climb up the whole challenger ladder. But I'm pretty sure you only need about 40 or 50 games to get back to your rank. You know what I mean? So,
that is true.
And I think that the time period, I think that the 10-month stretch, that's way too long. And I actually think people actually lost a lot of interest in the game.
That's true.
So people think that even now, like the season's been out for 6 weeks, I think, or something like that. Yeah, well, you went to China, right?
I went to China.
You've been back for like 2-3 weeks.
It's probably been,
five, 6 weeks,
yeah, probably about 5-6 weeks.
Dude, that's a long time. Everyone's basically
at the ladder is pretty accurate to what it would be, yeah. And most people in my program are basically at their rank, if not even above their rank.
And that's not playing that much.
That's true. That's actually a really good point.
You've played how many games on your main account? Like 100 games so far or like 90 games?
Yeah, 80. Somewhere between that, yeah.
And you're like 300 LP currently.
Yeah.
And that's like 600 LP lower. Like if you actually... And you're having massive gains and losses at the moment.
And that's not even with a good win rate.
Yeah, with a good win rate. You know, we're fine.
That's true. Yeah, it's interesting you put it like that. I think Riot have done a good job with the LP changes. I guess it makes sense.
That was essential. If this was the old LP changes, now it would be a struggle.
That's true, actually. When you put it like that, I feel like I'm just very conditioned. I'm not really used to the new LP changes. Like, I think we're used to gaining LP slowly over a long period of time, and they're kind of changing that.
Dude, if you have a 3-0 block, Curtis, you're gaining close to like 100 LP.
One thing that I do like about it, I do like the idea of incentivizing someone to be more consistently playing the game, and instead of viewing it as something you pick up once for a few months,
get your gold rank and log off.
Yeah, that's really what they... Well, I mean, obviously from a Riot business perspective, that's, you know, it makes sense from their end, right? They probably want to incentivize people to play more, obviously, over consistently, right? Rather than just a spurt of playing. But also, it's just not satisfying, right? Just to, you know, log in for two... You know, that's what a lot of people do. All right, I'm sure we all know that. All people you know that come on, they get their gold rank and then they piss off. But now they're a lot more incentivized to actually take the game more. And maybe they just do want it to be more, you know, taken a little bit more seriously, or the rank ladder specifically to be taken more seriously. Because you can go on, play norms whenever you want, right? They want the ranked ladder to feel like more special. You got to earn your rank all the time.
There's always a hardcore group of people always playing the game. That's I think I like that's that. Great. I think that's like great because, that. You know, again, like, you know, people say like the casual players base and that. Well, I think Riot is starting to now accept this is, it's a hardcore game. The ranked is for hardcore players.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that they have been taking the steps in the right direction to make it more hardcore in the sense that they've even removed Duo from Master Plus and stuff like that. They're really trying to make it a more competitive.
And they've talked about removing Duo for all ranks as well. They have talked about that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So,
and for the casual player base, it's more like these other modes, like Arena. In the
Ascension or whatever, like, it is. So that, yeah,
they talked about, I think as well in this video, talking about bringing back Nexus Blitz and all that sort of stuff. Right. So, yeah, so I think it's just different modes.
Yeah,
sort of stuff.
A good point, actually. Like, thinking big picture with the direction Riot are trying to go, they are, in a way, giving a lot of things to the casual players and making it kind of more, a little bit more hardcore.
And I think that's better for competitive ranked players. I think it's actually going to be very helpful for knowing that I'm going to log in and there's going to be someone who's played a lot throughout the year and very refined with their, and the ladder will be more integral because again, you've got to keep getting your rank back again and again. So you can't just drop off. You can't get platinum, or let's say emerald now in March, not play for 6 months and you're still platinum, still emerald. No, you have to like go back through the placements and all that sort of stuff again, probably playing a lot lower than your rank to earn that rank back.
So I think that, you know, one thing I found in my program is that when the new ladder changes came out, right? When Emerald Tier came out, there's a lot of confusion because you got to remember the stigma to a rank. There's all this stigma, right? Like what gold means, what platinum means, what emerald means, right? So I think we're still very much in that adjustment period. I feel like there is going to be a lot of, what's the word? Like a lot of people are going to be upset, I think, at the start. But then as it starts to kind of come in and the three split systems come in, I think people will just kind of, you know, start to get used to it and adapt. Yeah. And that's just kind of how every change has kind of been. It's like you kind of just, everyone realizes in hindsight that it probably was the better change.
That's right.
So, but yeah, I'm all for making the game a little bit more brutal, or the rank system specifically more competitive, because that's exactly what it should be. And there are many other options for more casual players. I think I would agree with that. And yeah, I just want to take back my statement, because I think even for the casual, more people who aren't able to play the game that much, because of the LP changes,
it's still fine.
It's still actually completely fine.
You can climb very, very quickly with a very little amount of games in League.
Interesting.
Okay. Like to your skill level. I think it will match you to your skill level.
Okay, one thing I will say though, learning champions, you have to be very strategic about when you want to do that. So I've had someone in my program, they were planning on using the preseason to learn a particular champion.
Great question.
So now they said, well, like, I think I might as well just learn it now. Screw my rank goal for this. Like, rather than going for plat, just stay in gold, learn this champion. So for them, when the next thing starts, next rank season starts, I can kind of hit the ground running, you know? So, like, I think now you got to, if you actually want to time your rank for a specific split and you want to spend, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks learning a champion properly, a champ that you've never touched before, then, yeah, you got to be maybe a little bit more strategic in the timing of that rather than conveniently having the preseason to learn something that's out of your, you know, out of your comfort zone. So, I think that is one thing that definitely changes.
And if you were to say the strategic timing, I mean, it would have to be at the start, right?
Because towards the end of a split that you know, you sacrifice a split.
You kind of sacrifice a split.
Yeah. Again, if it's going to be an intense
one. This
is
my learning split.
Yeah, this is my learning split. It's like, well, you can make that at the start of split one next year, but I don't think that would be a great idea either because all the new changes are going to come out, right? So that's going to mess with you.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, I guess...
I think now would be the perfect time.
If you're going to wait for... Okay, let's say obviously now's the perfect time.
Now would be the perfect
time. When it kicks in the whole three splits, let's say next year,
yeah,
right? I mean, so...
It wouldn't be the start of split one because all the changes come in.
So you think that should be when you're a really good champ master, you play your champion, not like learn a new champion with the new changes.
I feel like learning champions at the start of split one is the worst possible thing to do because everything... I learned that the hard way because what happened, I had all this mastery with Yone. And then the game changed, like all these items and shit changed, and it took me a while to like adjust.
I see.
You know what I mean? Like I actually feel like in a way, learning at the start's really not amazing. So
because it can be volatile with what you learn.
Yeah, so you want to... I would say what you would want to do is wait for the changes to come out, play your current champion pool on the new change that comes out, and then once you're acclimated to the patch, maybe like 3, 4, 5 weeks in, or whatever it might be, 4 weeks in, then you would kind of learn your champion.
Because one thing we actually didn't mention, Curtis, is that the January split, that is the new preseason. That's when all the game changes happen.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah.
But they still will do changes in split two and split three.
Yeah, still changes, but the big changes happen in January. In the first split, yep. January, February.
Yep.
Another point as well, just for talking about streamers and excitement about the game and Twitch and that sort of stuff. I think having three resets is cool for excitement of the game. Like, the reset is a big event. Like, you know, people getting
for sure,
especially for the high ELO community, people watching, you know, the race to challenge, the race to rank one.
I think people love the idea of a fresh start or a start anyway. Yeah. People love that.
Just psychologically.
Actually, you know, I'm going to just do some conspiracy theories here. Yeah. It could also be a way of disincentivizing Smurfs.
Yes.
Because, and I actually said this. I said this is actually one of the, I forgot to mention this. People who play on multiple counts will get punished for that. You don't have time to dick around on multiple accounts now. You know, you know there are these people that play one account, one game on their main, and then three more on a second account or whatever. You're just not going to get enough gains on your main account by doing that. This is kind of, in a way, pushing that whole... again, you want to get your games in on probably one account. You don't have time to level rank up multiple Smurfs. Smurfing doesn't really make as much sense anymore because it's gonna if the rank's gonna reset all the time. And that actually probably, again, this is crazy conspiracy. They're probably thinking Smurfing is a problem. It's a real big problem, right? Because it disincentivizes the lower ELO community from wanting to play the game, right? Someone getting shit on by a 20-0 Kha'Zix running around the map. They're not going to have fun, right? They don't like that. So how can we do that? Why are these people Smurfing in the first place? Okay, well, they're reaching their rank. There's
too much time.
There's too much time in the split. They're not incentivized to keep playing on their main account. So they're making second accounts, third accounts, fourth accounts. Okay, how do we do that? We shorten the rank splits. That would make it... That's an incredibly effective way to reduce Smurfing. And now you're having three splits, even reducing it even further. So I think, you know, I'm just spitballing. That could have been part of the discussion there.
I definitely think it will have an impact with it for sure.
And I actually said that to, you know, people, I think it was AJ or something, like especially next year, you know, playing on multiple accounts, probably not going to be a good idea.
No. So I think that's my other point there about, I think it'll be really good for the streaming community to get more excitement just for players. If you're a full-time league solo queue player, because just look at the attention of that whole Korean boot camp reset that everyone... I mean, obviously it was Korea, but it was still an event, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's cool that we have three of those a year. I think... I mean, just talking about it now, these changes, this is really exciting. I'm really excited for the three splits. I think it will, increase the competitiveness of the solo queue in general. You know you can log in on December 18th. And you can play a pretty hardcore game. Everyone's going to be serious because this rank season is going to be ending then. That's when it's actually most, you know, competitive.
Yeah.
So they're saying that they're currently... So there's no preseason this year. So our split now ends.
Apparently.
Is that how it works?
Well, it doesn't make sense on the client. It doesn't say that.
It hasn't updated yet.
Because it hasn't updated yet. On the client, it said that it ends in like
90 days,
right? Which doesn't add up to what they're saying. But what they said was that it's going to end... This split is going to end in January. Start of January.
So we might have way more time. And again, now thinking about that, dude, I think that's too much time, dude. It's too much.
Yeah, when you think about it, especially now with the LP games, as it currently stands.
It's too much time.
Or what are they going to do? Are they going to cut the season off anyway and then they're going to... They have to. They would have to do that.
I think we'll get more clarity about
that. Yeah, I don't know.
Shall we continue on the video?
Yeah, continue on the video.
Pew, aka Pew Pew Lasers, and today I'm going to take you through some of the upcoming changes we're making in preseason and ranked splits in League of Legends. As mentioned, we're moving into a 3-ranked split per year structure with resets between each one. This should hopefully result in more impactful games and a faster climb for each split, and it also means you'll have the opportunity to earn 3-ranked skins each year. Part of the change to this model is taking a look at preseason. Past preseasons have gone onto PBE in early October, giving players a lot of time to explore and learn the gameplay changes that will be featured for the coming year. The flip side is that by the time the new season starts, the gameplay changes no longer feel new. In other words, the time in which players are most excited to play with the new changes and the time in which players are allowed to and excited to start their rank climb were not aligned with each other. So this year, and in each year moving forward, we're planning to have preseason hit PBE in mid-November with an official release in January of 2024 on the same patch that ranked and esports play begins. The current rank split will stay live through November and December of this year, giving players more time to get to their desired rank. Now, this is a new approach and does carry some risks, so we're going to have to be really on top of it in terms of the balance and the meta at the start of each split. We think the trade-offs are really worth it, and we're excited to start 2024 off with a bang. If you'd like to learn more, we've got a dev blog on this topic that's live now.
All right, well, okay. That's really, I think that, dude, imagine.
Wow, so this split's huge.
Yeah, this split is huge, yeah. They, dude, imagine the chaos of the rank reset plus new changes in the January. That's actually cool, exciting as well.
It's going to be pure
chaos. Sort of like, you know how we talk about the huge part why we love the game is ability to adapt and how that emulates the real world of like the fast moving world. This is where people can get creative. This is where I think that's really cool. Some people will hate it and they like want to, you know, too much chaos, too much control, anti-change.
I mean, that's what we're comfortable with, yeah?
Yeah, but I think this is really embracing like what League of Legends is all about and why the game has survived for so long is because of the rate that Riot changed the game.
That's Riot's biggest strength with League of Legends. Yes. How often they change the game, keeping it fresh and new and exciting, and that's why people play it because it isn't just the same thing.
Nope.
Right?
You don't have the same meta, the same champions all the time.
And that's why new players can always come up and climb in the new ladder because they've adapted to the patch better than other people, or they've learned new skills and gotten better, and other people have fallen off. They've stuck in their ways, and that's the beauty of League. One of the main advantages of League. Exciting. Very exciting.
Should we look at the preseason content here, Curtis?
I don't think anything else really
matters. What's this last one? Arena?
Yeah.
I think let's look at the next 60 seconds.
Okay.
In terms of what's in preseason, we have a lot of changes that we're working on. We're looking at terrain adjustments to parts of Summoner's Rift, changes to map objectives, and significant modifications to the item system, some of which I'd love to share with you today. Earlier this year, we said that we weren't really happy with how Mythic items landed, and that we were open to removing the system entirely if the changes implemented didn't bring us closer to where we wanted it to be. And well, they didn't. So starting in January of 24, Mythic items will be removed from League of Legends. Trying to serve the needs of a bunch of different champions in a class with a few mythic items has proven to be really challenging. And while it works pretty well for about half the roster, the other half is left with items that don't feel really right for them or have their creativity stifled. While the mythic item tier will be removed, we will be adjusting current mythic items that players really like to be exciting options rather than prescriptive centerpieces. So that means you can go back to buying Infinity Edge with Trinity Force if you'd like. You can learn more about other item changes and everything else we're cooking for preseason.
So this is exactly what Froxon said, right?
Yeah, we talked about this in our episode with Riot Froxon, yeah.
Yeah, and he said that, you know, their goal with mythic items, you know, to paraphrase, was something along the lines of they wanted every champion in the game to feel like they have
something unique
to their kit. But then what they realized is that
it's too theoretical.
There's too many champions, and then all you're doing is now pigeonholing a lot of champs that don't really have a mythic.
A good mythic, yeah.
And then that just kind of really makes that, you know, that player doesn't feel very satisfied with the items they want to purchase. So, yeah. And I from what I've seen, a lot of people are happy with that. You know, I don't think, as people know at this podcast, we're not really massively big on items and all that stuff. This is not really what me and Nathan get excited over. So I think that, you know, if there was or wasn't mythic items, I couldn't really care, to be honest, for me personally. as long as there's items I can buy, I'll buy them and I'll make do with what I got.
Getting a maybe a little
bit... But I can understand.
...better mythic isn't the reason why I'm dying on my level 3.
That's right. Exactly. I'm more concerned with the gameplay rather than the items. But I will say, though, I can understand exactly why people would be happy about this, especially people who love, like expatriates who love that kind of that... Mm. You know, itemization,
the theory crafting
aspects, and want more diversity in the builds and want to get more creative. And I totally respect that and understand that. So I do think that's a good change to serve the wider community. So I do have a kind of a good segue,
okay,
if you don't mind.
Go ahead. Take it away, Curtis.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, as we're talking about adaptability, you know, that's a huge part of our podcast and why we love the game and, you know, being adaptable, thriving in chaos and adaptability is a huge part of having, if you don't have that skill, you're going to really struggle in League as the seasons change and as things happen, right? And, you know, and I think I want to kind of share a little bit about some things with me recently in my solo queue that I found fascinating, and then also just some case studies with also MLA clients that I've stumbled across recently. You know, one of the huge advantages of coaching that we have mentioned, right, is that, or not even coaching, just someone being there with you to look at a VOD, is that that person watching is able to be objective. They're able to see what happens, No bullshit. No
They're not in the emotional aspect of the game.
Yeah, they're not emotional. They don't care about the really result of that game. They're just looking to see what objectively happens, right? And there are ways we can do this our own. Right? We take breaks. Maybe we're not ready to review. We review the game the next day or before your block or an hour or two later, whatever it might be. There's things we can do to increase how objective we are when we do our reviews. But nothing beats just someone looking at your game. And recently, I'm just feeling like I had this feeling after my games that I'm just being delusional. And I'm like, obviously, you know, we played the game for quite a while. And when I hear my brain say things, it just rings alarm bells. Like I literally.
What are some examples?
Yeah, unironically, these are some narratives. These are like sentences that literally get read in my brain. Like, this champ is bullshit. Why does it feel like when every time they get prior, they can do something? When I get prior, I can do nothing. Why does it feel that I make one mistake, the game's over? Like these sorts of narratives, right? And when these things come up, you know, I'm like, why am I? Like, I really like to investigate and reflect. Like, what's going on here? And I actually realized that without just subconsciously, I was doing surface level reviews. I was seeing things. I was opening the review. I was looking at like trying to figure out the key moments, but they weren't proper, real, thorough, curious, open-minded reviews. But it was happening without me realizing it. So what I did, because after my reflection, I realized there's something off here. This is not good. Like I'm not being objective about my own gameplay. I got AJ. I said, AJ, I need you to help me here. Just look at my VODs. Like, and we've sat down a few times this week. I said, AJ, do you have time? And as soon as he's there with me and we look at it, it's like, it feels like I'm watching a different game. It's just scary. It is scary how quickly we can become delusional and deluded over what we think is happening in a game and what is actually happening in a game. And the reason I wanted to share this story is that if this is happening to me, you know, someone who literally lives and breathes coaching and improvement and, you know, people say have a monk mentality or whatever, fuck me. Like, this is like, you know, I can't even imagine the difficulties of what it would be like for the average person who, let alone, it already struggles with reviews. And this is what makes League so fucking hard. League is truly, and I mean this from the bottom of the hardest game, not because technically it's the hardest. The combination of the changes to the games, the ranked system, the way you're going to get auto losses.
The format of play with four other people.
The format of the 5v5 nature of the game and how you only have a certain amount of impact in the game. You not getting the same drafts and the same champions every game. The amount of chaos in a game. And the emotional toll and things that can happen, that whirlwind hurricane mixture of shit creates this brutal, brutal thing. And I remember, like, after this review with AJ, so essentially, if we get into the details, like, I was fixated on my jungler's mistakes.
Yep. You will focus on what you want to focus on in a review.
You tunnel vision. You screen
out. The blinkers are on and you're just looking, skip it to this part. And then even what you're looking at the minimap, you're looking at that person and trying to identify their mistakes.
So like what I was doing was like in the game, I had an idea of like what was causing us to be in a losing position. As a result, when I went into the review, I was looking to confirm the narrative that I had already kind of already decided before heading into that review. So I'm just confirming what I already saw, what I already believed, rather than trying to be open-minded and curious about what is actually happening. And the only way you counter this, I mean, there's things, there's tools, right? I mean, the most effective way is to get someone, just like get help, like get a friend. They don't even need to be a coach. Just look, can you look at this with me? What do you think of this? And they might just say something that just completely like shocks you. It's like, oh, shouldn't you have just not taking it, like, why are you taking this fight? Like, they can just say something simple like that.
It's even as simple as, like, look at your clicks. Like, what are you, like,
why'd you miss that ability?
Yeah.
How'd you miss that charm?
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Like, and then it's just like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. If I actually hit that charm, fuck, we actually win the skirmish and that doesn't lead to that. And then you're like, fuck, I'm actually looking at this whole review now through a different lens. And that is exactly what happened. I was fixated on my jungler's decisions. And yes, they were bad decisions, but there were so many other things that I was doing that was contributing to the game. Like I fucked up like three skirmishes and then didn't ping. I thought I was pinging, but I wasn't. I missed like two pings.
That is the best one. People think they're pinging
time. And I thought I pinged.
There's no pings going on.
And I'm like, fuck, if I ping this one and I like call this off and I skirmish these two fights better, fuck, this game's actually really winnable. Mm. And I thought it was like an auto loss. And so, like, I just love getting humbled like this. I just fucking love it.
League is the best scam.
It's just the best to get humbled. And then it's like, it's not confusing why I'm losing these games. I'm like, great. And then when you consolidate this shit, like when you actually, when this happens, you get this feeling like, oh, wow, I actually am actually contributing a lot to my losses.
It feels like it's in your control. And then you get excited. We want things to feel like it's in our control. The moment it feels like it's out of your control,
that's when the game feels fucked.
And the game is so unfun.
This is why I want to bring it back to the Saber episode where, like, I totally understand how he feels. Like, I understand. Like, I get it. Like, I fucking get it. Like, he needed that help. Saber needed help from someone else objectively looking at his gameplay to support him, to see what he was doing. You know, and because that is kind of like the conclusions that he's came to. I can easily see many, many, many people coming to similar conclusions, you know. And it's not just Saber. I'm just using him as a recent example because we spoke about him in the last two episodes. But just everyone and anyone. So I'm really, really excited and refreshed. I feel like I'm really, like I was feeling like I couldn't understand what was happening. But now it's so clear to me thanks to like AJ just pointing out a few basic shit that I could have easily spotted, but I couldn't because I wasn't able to be objective.
You've removed the fog.
Yeah.
Fog. Now it's a beautiful sunny day now, Curtis.
Yep. And then, and that's what, you know, I think end of week reflection is a great toolkit. I think we all, if you are taking your league journey seriously, anyone out there, watch it, listen to this. One of the most effective tools, obviously we talk about end of day, end of block reflections. I think they're great. Like you're in the shower. Just think about what happened in your block. Just have it. What's going on? How did you feel? Why did you feel that way? Just have it.
You don't have to have the answers.
Yeah, just raise questions.
Yeah.
Right? Let shit fucking sink in. And then end of week, I think are great. It's like, well, what happened this week? And just like pick a few games to look over. Like what happened? What happened this game? What happened that loss? What happened that one? And start to just look. Not play. Don't play. Just what? Just like think and look at your OBG. Look at the reviews. Look at the gameplay. And a lot of answers will come. And that reflection, that taking a step back is so, so important.
I could never be able to play a next block until because I review between each games, right? That's my process. And after I do my reviews, or like, let's say I come back, I'll like open up my match history or go on OPGG and I'll be like, I reflect, I look, I was like, okay, that's what happened that game. That makes sense. Tick box. That's what happened that game. Yep. That's what happened that game. If I don't do that,
I was doing that.
You were doing that.
That's the scary thing.
It was just what you said about that game was not.
So that's the thing. And that's why you got to be honest. That's the hard thing.
That's the hard part. You're
the hard being is being honest with yourself. Yeah. Because it's so easy to pigeonhole games. Like, yep, that's that game. And that guy did that. I did this. But you can easily just be wrong. Like, you can be wrong. You can be delusional. Mm. So, like, I think that's okay. Like, I think for me, it was more like, I don't know. I don't know how to, like, I don't really know how to bypass that. I think the only way to bypass that is, again, the end of week reflection. I just felt like something was wrong. Like, it was a feeling. I felt like something was fundamentally wrong with my gameplay. And I think a sign... If your gameplay is fundamentally wrong, if you're finding yourself saying this or feeling this, I feel like I'm playing really well. I feel like I'm not playing that bad and I'm losing a lot. That is a giant fuck over. Like I'm talking like not just three, not a block, not two. I'm talking multiple blocks here. I'm talking a week, like multiple days worth of games. If you say that sentence or feel that sentence in any way,
sirens going off.
You need to do some investigative journalism and get into the details, like really, and get help because that is how I felt. That I felt like, oh,
I'm playing well. I feel like I'm playing. Have a large sample size of games.
Yeah, I feel like I'm playing
12 games.
Yeah, or like multiple blocks, multiple days. I'm like, I feel like I'm playing pretty well.
I play 15 games, so like I'm playing pretty well.
But I'm like not going. I'm like just I'm losing a lot of games. Like. And I'm like, is that just teammates? Is that just like, what is it? And then that's where the narratives come in. My champ shit or like, what's like, there's all these things. My mind's trying to pigeonhole into convenient excuse. Oh, my jungler this, my jungler that. It's not that. It's like you're making fundamentally bad decisions, whether you're aware of it or not. And you got to dig. And that's painful. It's fucking painful. And there's a quote from one of my MLA members. He said, Curtis, I know that I'm the reason I'm losing games, but I can't bring myself to look at the review. My ego can't take it.
Love it.
I love that. Because that's how we all feel. Because it's painful.
Yeah.
But you just got to do it. I mean, because it's sitting there pissing away time, throwing mud at the walls, it's not going to...
Yeah.
It's even worse.
Yeah, because we talk about improvement, right? And it's like, it's, you know, it's like, what do people want? Do people just want that whole match history of just all green? Like, that's...
Yes!
That's what they want, right? But it doesn't...
That's the dream.
That's the dream, but it doesn't really... It's not going to lead to it just doesn't work like that,
right?
You know, one of my favorite quotes, you know, in Dark Knight Rises, where Bane versus Batman, and then, you know, Batman's obviously had all this success, and they, like, meet each other in that underground thing, and then Bane says, "A peace has cost you your strength. Victory has defeated you."
Mm.
I love that. And then the Batman just gets obliterated by this, you know, this hardened, you know, like Bane just being this beast, like lived in the dark for his whole life and stuff. Like victory winning a lot weakens you. It really does.
It does.
You know?
And having success in past seasons weakens you. Having that expectation. I was talking to, there's that detention guy. He came to OS. He's like an NA Zoe OTP. And he's asking kind of advice. And I tuned into his stream and he was like, you know, raging and tilt queuing and whatever it was, like just having a bad mental and solo queue. And I said to him, I said, dude, you're making game losing decisions. It's not the server. It's not the teammates. It's not the junglers. It's you're making bad, whether you're aware of it or not. Like I tuned into like one, I was watching one of his vods. He's like 4-0, goes for like a really dumb play and gives like a huge shutdown. That's why you're losing the game. That should have been a winnable game, and you just did some dumb shit, and you gave it, like, that's what I'm talking about. But he would have conveniently blamed the jungler for blah, 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 whatever the X amount. But if we cut the crap and cut the bullshit, and again, I've been there, I understand, I know how he feels, and because I just went through the same thing, you are contributing to the losses. And because he's had that identity of being the, you know, the best Zoe player in previous seasons or on Challenger in XYZ season, he came in expecting that he would get results. And when you come in expecting that you're going to smooth sail, everything's going to be good, and then it doesn't, that's not what happens. It's so hard to get into the details.
That's why process, this is why, Curtis, we're all about process. Bill Walsh, the score takes care of itself. You can have... You know, I'm not saying that having a huge match history of wins is great, but if that's the focus, you're going to get beaten down. It's going to be about process. It's going to be about, you know, again, the score takes care of itself. I'm making these specific decisions and then outcome happens here. But I'm not attached to the win and the loss. I don't really care that much. I'm purely looking at my decision making. The game becomes so much more fun that way rather than looking at that blue match history and the red match history. Like, honestly, blue match histories and red match histories, they're cool. They're maybe not cool, but they really don't mean much to me at all. I'm just purely, I'm so in depth into people's decision making, my own decision making. I'm just numb to even win streaks at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's
I'm actually the end goal. I'm actually more afraid of win streaks. I'm afraid of a win streak because I know what I know I'm missing stuff here. I think that I'm not missing anything.
Yeah. I genuinely, and you know, we've done this whole thing, this podcast, this our content, we've done coaching for a while, and every week, and when this shit happens, I'm just reminded what you just said there, that emphasis on the decision-making is, you just got to do it. It's a non-negotiable. It is straight up, and we're not saying, or at least for me, like, we all love to win. We play to win. We play to climb the ladder, right? There's an element of that. But you're spot on. That cannot be the number one focus. And that just is how the system gets you. That's how it gets you. You get all that juicy LP. You get excited. You get the dopamine rush.
You think of the best player on planet Earth.
And then you get humbled time and time again. You've got to find a way to bring it back to just the decisions. And that's it. And it's way easier said than done.
Yeah.
It was so hard.
Yeah. People like, watch this podcast. Yeah, I'm so excited to get a raise.
And last thing, I just wanted to share that because this is coming from like... I sometimes feel like this is divide. It's like there's Coach Curtis and Nathan Mott sitting here doing this podcast, and I'm just this guy who they never feel like, no, I feel the same. It happens to us.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Like, I think it's so important to share that we experience the same shit.
Yep.
The same narratives, the same feelings. We just we're probably a bit better at getting on top of it faster, reducing that self-sabotage.
The moment you don't see us playing solo queue, then you no longer listen to us because we do not relate to the feelings and we're not thinking 100%. About that. That is so important.
Yep.
That's why we're huge practitioners as well as in solo queue, as well as our coaching as well.
That's right.
All right. I have a topic here, which is a tweet from Gotham Chess. I don't really follow him at all, but I know he's an educational chess content guy. He's really big in the chess community space. made a tweet here about one trick will change your life. Learn like a child. In my 15 plus years of teaching chess, I noticed that kids are fearless. They try crazy moves, guess constantly, and have no anxiety for potential mistakes or failures. Adults are the opposite. I have taught CEOs who preface their correct answers with, "This is probably wrong, but..." Curb your ego, be prepared to fail, learn like a child, chess and anything else. Love that. I love that lesson of learn like a child. Children are just so much better, dude, like, at learning things than adults, you know? Like, again, I love that he said, like, even, like, you know, he's saying someone really smart, someone who's, you know, got to the position of a CEO, they have this ego, you know, this, they can't be vulnerable. They can't be, you know, accept failure or accept reality. And I say that all the time in my students all the time. They just, they can logically, you know, but they always have that word, but. I hate that word, but, right? It's like, I did this, but, like, this is why I did it, or whatever, like that. You know, versus saying, this is it, that's it, this is the mistake, move on, learn from it, move on. Speed, relentless failure.
Yeah, there's a great quote. It's like something like, change the word but to and. If you change that word.
Love it.
It's like, I'm going to do this. Or it's like, I did this and, you know, I'm going to just suffer the consequences. It's like, but there's no but, you know what I mean? Like, because but, it kind of, it's like an excuse.
Yeah, it's like it validates. It's like, oh, I understand that. Yeah,
it invalidates.
But then whatever you just said doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, that's right. You want to change but to and. Mm. I think that's really important. But yeah, you want to fail boldly. And getting comfortable with failure and losing is just so... And again, notice how it's the same... This ties into kind of what we were just talking about before. I feel like there's this tug of war consistently in league. You're getting pulled in one direction every single moment in time by the LP. And by fear of losing, right? There's this fear of losing, fear of getting going down the ladder. Like, this is this giant this fear.
Yeah.
It's like you're scared that the next step you're going to fall down some, like, booby trap and you're going to get killed or some shit. That's like, everyone has that. Like, everyone has that. It's
the anxiety.
It's the anxiety that everything that you've done, you're just a fraud, then your next lose streak, that's it, you're done, you're burnt.
Like, you've been exposed.
It's over, and you're never going to recover. You're going to lose that LP, and it's done forever. You know what I mean? Like, there's that fear, never-ending, like, of just losing and fear of failure. Because I think, like, the biggest fear is, like, if they lose, like, they're not going to be able to get it back or something. It's, like, forever, you're stuck. And I think that ties into that fear of, like, not being... Again, yeah, not thinking long term, not believing their ability to actually learn the skill and understand the skills that go into, like, the climb. And yeah, I think it's just, like, external pressures, a lot of external pressures.
It's funny, you have to, like, to improve at a skill, improve at league, you have to simultaneously think and be intentional as well as not think. You gotta, like, turn your brain off to all the bullshit as well as think, you know? Like, it's not black and white.
Yeah, you're spot on. You have to be intentional with what you do, but the more intentional with what you do, the more attached you become to those decisions.
Yes.
Like, a classic example, and one of the most hardest things to teach in league, is getting people to ping shit off. Like, that is so fucking hard. Not because it's complicated. Like, they can know the answer in the game. Like, even me, I know this dragon is bad. And I'll do, like, two little small bad guys back. But, like, that my read on the situation is not... I know what to do, and I know it's not the right play, but I'm not boldly... It's so hard for me to boldly click back or ping back because it's a fear of being wrong, fear of failure. What if I'm wrong? Oh my God, if I make the wrong call? Because I'm scared of owning that situation, because if I own that situation, it's all on me. It's all on me, and that's scary as fuck.
So scary, because then it's like at an identity level. If I do this and it fails, I'm going to get flamed by my team for being in love and stuff like that. I get caught out. I'd rather just be a passenger. Sit by. Yep,
comfortable.
That's comfortable.
My comfortable passenger seat. I don't need to be the one taking responsibility here. They're the ones that are taking responsibility. I can hide in the shadows. When I get to this in my review, I know it's not really my fault because they're the ones that did it. That was them. They were trying to do that. I'm over here. You know, it's convenient. And this is all subconscious. We're not even realizing we're doing this. We're just trying to escape that attention, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what I always say. Yeah, the more intentional you can be with your gameplay, with your decisions, like in terms of those key decision moments, key macro moments, the faster you'll improve.
Keyword: own your decisions as well. Own your losses. Never You know what? I hate seeing people in reviews, people that apologize for saying, oh, my bad. Yeah. I hate people who are saying,
yeah,
my bad.
Yeah.
Never apologize for a mistake you make in the game.
Yep.
If that means that that person is just going to flame you for the rest of the game because you never apologize or whatever, so be it. Lose, move on to the next game. Couldn't care less.
Yeah,
because that builds a really weak mindset in my mind. It's like, oh, sorry, guys, my bad.
Right, you're going to be timid in the future if you're in that situation again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so what you mean. Yeah, because what you've just said there, by saying my bad or apologizing, saying sorry, you're sorry for trying something. That's you're right. Sorry for trying.
I'm not apologizing for that.
You're sorry Fuck for that. Testing something, or you're sorry for playing at your level of play.
Yep.
That's really what it actually is saying. Right? But I totally agree. But it's there. This never-ending tug of war. Really, and between trying to genuinely get better and focus on the improvement, but then fear of failure. And like you said, the more you care, the more you try to improve, this, you know, in a way, the kind of the more, for what people think there is, the more there is to lose, because they're trying more. And the more you try, the more exposed, the more vulnerable you become. But children, like you said, don't give a shit. They're going to try their best. They're going to try some crazy shit. If they fail, oh, that's interesting. That's what happens. Okay, that's it. Again, easier said than done.
Learn like a child.
I like it.
All right, Curtis, let's move on to summer school now.
Okay.
All right, one of our top posts for this week, this was 6 days ago, by a user called High on G Fuel. So this guy's going to be jacked.
What a username.
All right, the title of this this post is Genuine Question. How do people actually obtain Challenger in League of Legends? Hello. So sorry for the pretty vague question. Haha. Currently peaked at Gold 2 last split, Platinum 4 now, and have been surprisingly playing League of Legends since Season 4, on and off of course. But this past year, I have been enjoying playing League consistently, and basically have played over 1,200 games over the course of Season 13. I understand that the game quality is much more important than game quantity, and that in order to reach Challenge, you have to be better than basically the entire player base, and only the top 300 players actually reach this ladder. So I suppose what I'm asking is, should I sit down for some time to actually study the game as a whole in order to improve my gameplay? I'd love to reach high Elo as much as anybody else, but I definitely feel like I'm struggling with my playstyle, role assignment, and basically feel hard stuck in Gold Plat Elo. Thank you for taking your time to read this post, and really any kind of advice is much appreciated. Thank you. I'm very passionate about League of Legends and love to pursue League of Legends in terms of esports, and I know I'm nowhere near the level of those kinds of players. However, I would love to look for some kind of starting ground in order to take the game more seriously. Again, apologies for the vagueness of this post. I'm just really looking for some advice and get jump started and just to learn some more, generally speaking, about how to reach these high Elo levels.
I've got something I want to start with this.
Yeah.
I watched this video recently about a professional teacher. So he studied education, and he studied how learning works, right? One of the pieces of advice he gave to people studying, wanting to get better at anything, is that the way the brain works is that we need to know how to think about something at a high level. So if you're learning let's say League, for example, a lot of people I feel struggle because they get into the details early, but they don't understand what that means in the context of what does it mean to climb? And I've really thought about this in terms of really trying to put myself in the shoes of, okay, if I'm new to League, I'm relatively new, let's say I'm an intermediate beginner even, and I just see this rank in the distance, it's Challenger, it's so far away, it's unfathomable, it's you're in bronze or silver, and then this Challenger, and it's how do I even think about being Challenger? How do I even conceptualize the idea of being that good at the game? I don't even know how to think about it. Because people might say, oh yeah, you need to, reset better. They say these specific things they can't visualize at a high level what it looks like. And I think, the first thing that I would say, and this ties to improvement in League in general, is that League is a game, and the way the ladder works is that there isn't just one way to get better. I think that's the first thing you ought to realize, is that there isn't one specific skill set that will get you from A to B. You can have a diamond 4 And I don't know if this is the same in other sports. Like, I don't know if this is the same in chess. Like, if you get to 2,000 rating, they can be two that you have different strengths and weaknesses. I'm sure it probably does, but I don't know. But at least in League, like, you can have a Diamond 4 Lux, two Diamond 4 Luxes, same rank, and they can have very different strengths and weaknesses. One might be actually pretty bad at not amazing at laning, and then make up for it in mid game and just have really great positioning, knows how to use Fog of War, and maybe even just farms well, but just doesn't do great trading and is really conservative. Another one is just they hit every E. They just dominate early lane, get ahead, and they just know how to snowball leads really well or whatever. My point being is that every player has strengths and weaknesses. And so the way I want you to think is about League is that don't view it in terms of like, there is this one cookie cutter way and you learn these things in this order and you do this, and you're going to get challenged. That's not really the way you should think about League. The way you should think about League is that, okay, I love a champion. All right. I love these champions. I like these champions. These are interesting to me. I like the way they play. Okay. And then you think about, okay, so how do I want to play these champs? You start to like, you know, what do they do? And then you start to think of like climbing through, all right, I'm going to play these champs and I'm going to choose to level up my abilities or like my skills in the game however I want to do it. That's the way I kind of view it. It's like, okay, I want to play Lux. I love Lux. And how do I want to play Lux? And you start fucking around. You start fucking around a lot with Lux. And then you pick a few things that you feel like are interesting, that you feel like are weaknesses in your gameplay, that you feel like, okay, I feel like I'm dying a lot in these situations, or I feel like I'm always getting stuck in lane with no mana. And you just pick maybe a few things, and it does a lot of the time it doesn't even matter in what order.
And you get an inspiration from the best Lux players, the best Lux
players.
Yeah,
and like look at other people. But like my point that I'm trying to make here is that I think the way you want to view it is that you learn there's the champ stuff, there's the game stuff, but don't view it as that there's a particular order. There's no one structured way to climb. You can do it in many, many different ways. You might end up at the same place, but you can get there taking many different journeys. Mm. And so my recommendation, the way like people actually reach Challenger is that we all get there differing ways. We all get there differing ways with differing skills and playing different champions and perceiving the game in actually different ways. And at the end, towards the very, very end, we all kind of get to the same destination in a weird way, but through very differing fucking ways. Mm. And so don't think that it's just this super streamlined thing. And so then I would say, okay, well, given that that's the way you can think about it, all right, well, then there's the champ specifics, and then there's the champ mastery, and then there's the game concepts, and then you should apply the game concepts to your champion that are important. Like, you're not going to focus on roaming if you play Lux. You're not going to focus too much on ganking if you play Shyvana jungle. You know what I mean? So there's that stuff as well. So it all ties back to champ mastery in the end. But yeah, I want to explore that idea more with our coaching programs and with the key message in this podcast. I want to think high level, then go granular. Sometimes I feel like we go too granular, but they don't understand what that means. I'll give you one more pragmatic example of this, okay? I had a client right now in the mid lane school, a Platinum 4 Lux. She recently reached Platinum 4 with Lux. I watched her gameplay this morning. She was the first client I've ever seen that is the new age of what I deem to be the proper way to climb in League. Right, this is what happened. You know, we talk a lot about champ mastery. Champ mastery over fundamentals. There was no wave management. There was no warding. There was no leaning. There was no resets. Mm. She was Platinum 4.
Mm.
You know what she was spectacular at?
What?
Her E usage, amazing. Q accuracy, amazing. R accuracy. She knows how to do damage really, really well, and she knows when she's strong and she knows when she's weak. She knows how to position well.
Interesting.
I saw in a fight, she actually purposely held her Q, repositioned, lined up the Q, got the double Q. I was like, that right there is why you're Platinum 4.
Hmm.
Any...
Those things are a very significant impact.
Very significant. And there was so many things. She landed that R that got that kill that saved the jungler. She repositioned in this fight to get the double Q instead of rushing her Q, which allowed her to get a double kill instead of maybe no kills.
Yeah.
These little things.
Yeah.
She landed these three E's, right? Even though her mana was screwed and her wave states were bad. And because she landed the abilities, she got the kill. And that changed everything.
So it's really interesting, isn't it? Because if she was in bronze and she started with watching some video about wave management or something like that, it would not really be getting her the results that you've seen just from the power of winning fights with the champion with champ mastery.
I know. And what's crazy, right? And this is what I realized. I said, wow, fuck me. It's so much easier to learn the game now with this skill set. Because now, look at this. This is the problem I face with, I think, my older clients. I teach them the fundamentals. They know how to reset well. They know how to put themselves in strong positions. But it doesn't make sense why the fundamentals are important, because you get to this spot. I was like, I'm pretty fast.
So what do I do now? Yeah, and they can't hit their abilities.
I can't kill shit. I don't know how to win the game. It doesn't make sense. It's like you're playing football without a ball. It's like I've got my shoes, I'm laced, I'm fit, I can run fast, I'm really agile, I know like all the rules, but then I don't have a fucking ball underneath. I can't score, I can't do anything. I'm just running around the pitch. You know, that's kind of like how I feel. The fundamentals without champ mastery just doesn't do anything.
No.
And so she was the perfect example in my mind of like why champ mastery and why really understanding your champion and learning how to do damage.
It confirmed it.
It just confirmed it in my mind. This is the best way to learn the game.
Yeah. I've definitely 100% found that with the success with my clients. Like, specifically Wukong. We've had so much success with, like, Wukong Lily on our program because we're just talking about purely how do we do our full combos Wukong. And it's just night and day. The people that can do their combos and don't, two different results in the game.
Yeah. It's a different champ and a different game. So, yeah, I think the way, you know, tying this back to the question, the way you should view it is like, yeah, this champ mastery. And then from champ mastery, you learn the game and the game concepts. And then you can actually start to figure out how to win the game. And then over time, you build more muscle memory, put yourself in more situations. And then you ultimately build a lot of anticipation. And then that's where kind of creativity comes into play. And then that's it, really. And then it comes down to self-expression. So from his situation, if you're hard sucking gold and plat, you've probably got a problem with champ mastery and really playing what you love. And then you've probably got if you have that, then you probably have a problem with the fundamentals of your role.
I mean, God, this could be so many reasons.
It could be a trillion things.
This view of the game, is it the game, are you viewing the game in terms of kills or experience and gold accumulation, tilting, all that sort of stuff? I chose this question because more so the fact that this is a question that gets asked is so interesting to me. So let's think about other questions that would be in other industries. Would you say this would be equivalent to saying, how do I become a millionaire?
Right. So say someone who, let's say you're someone who works at McDonald's, 16-year-old kid, got their first part-time job, and they're like saying, how do I become a millionaire?
Would you respond to that?
I think there's really good responses though.
Yeah, there's some good responses, some good principles there, but in terms of like
practicality,
like a step-by-step guide doesn't exist, right? When you're asking how do I obtain Challenger League, you're basically saying how do I become a professional League of Legends player? That's what you are essentially when you're a challenger.
That's right.
You're in the top 0.00%, like you're insanely high at something. Like this is the same thing as saying how do I become, you know, like a a pro
anything.
Yeah, pro anything. I mean, I was going to say like a pro tennis player, but 300 spots. How many pros are there in tennis, would you say? I mean, I don't know. We can look that up. But let's say even getting into like the, you know, college level or something like that.
It's harder to be a challenger in America than in league than it is, like odds wise, to become a college NFL player or something.
So that was about getting into LCS, not challenger.
Right. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, LCS. It's harder to get into a professional league LCS than it's harder to get into the LCS than it is to be an NFL player.
Right.
Just for raw spots.
Raw spots and percentages.
Percentages, yeah. So I think it's really interesting, like, you know, this question. And we might go through some comments here about this, you know, and he even says there, sorry for the pretty vague question. It's like, yeah, you know, it is a vague question. Like, extremely vague.
But I don't
question.
Know. I kind of like the question.
You like the question?
I
just like think big pictures, like, tell me, how do I get challenger? Just, you know, just tell me.
No, but again, this is what I'm saying, Nathan. I feel like what this person is, he doesn't even know how to think about it. That's what I'm saying. That's what he means. Yeah, yeah. I'm reading between the lines here. Like, I think people sometimes want context. What is the climb actually?
I
you know, that's how I view the question.
Yeah, so you're talking about like, what does the journey
big
look
picture.
Like? What does it feel like?
Yeah, like, because again, Nathan, I'll ask you a question, right? Like, say you were learning something that you know nothing about, like, let's say physics. like biology. You don't even, like, someone might teach you, okay, here, Nathan, here's the definition of what a chromosome is or some shit, right, in biology.
Yeah.
Like, but what the fuck is biology? Like, how do I think about what this chromosome is what does in it the mean? Grand scheme? You see what I mean? Like, so how do I become a biologist? It is a good question because you would want someone to distill, like, what does it mean to be very, understand biology? Like, what is that? I genuinely would have no idea.
So what does that look like? How do you view the world?
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. Like,
so how does a Challenger player think?
Is that what you're saying? And how what do they view mean? The game? Like, what does it mean to be a Challenger player? And what like, what mean? Is, like, when you, what's the gap? How do I visualize the gap between, okay, here's the definition of a chromosome to, I understand how every walking living thing, like, lives and breathes.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is, like, what the fuck?
It's ginormous. It's terrifying, isn't it?
And that is really kind of like the way I view this question. Yeah. It's like, it's an interesting question.
So maybe the answer is you just take one step at a time. Is that an answer?
I think that's a shittish answer. Because you want direction.
You don't even know where you're walking towards. That's what and I'm this saying. Is where things like Champ Mastery comes in the play.
That's what I mean.
You just got to start walking in the right direction.
You want to have a rough North Star, okay? It's like, it's somewhere that way. Okay, I got to be really good at my champ. I got to like know how to do damage, a lot of damage while not dying and stay farmed. Okay, how do I do that? And that will lead you, I say, just be real, play a lot, get a lot of champ mastery, know your combos really, know how to do damage, know how to fight well with your champ. Okay, that's something I can like latch onto. Okay, that's one aspect. And then, okay, how do you do all that without dying?
Mm.
Okay, that's like another thing. Like, okay, how do you, and then they know how every interaction between every champ works. And they know who's going to win the fight just from looking at it. Like, that's another thing. And the way that is developed is by putting yourself in thousands and thousands of situations and looking at the game from multiple perspectives.
Okay, how about we use the example, Curtis, when we first got to Challenger back in Season 3 and using our view from other competitive games to League, like what concepts did we apply?
I don't want to use Season 3 Challenger because it's just a different game. Dude. Okay. Like, I want to use now. Like, let's say I'm not Challenger now, I'm like Master, but let's say last split. Like what makes a Challenger player? Like, what? That's a great question. What makes a Challenger player?
Something I always think about in terms of video games is like, okay, this is a game. I'm thinking about how to maximize you've got a limit to the game. You have 4 abilities and you can only walk so fast and you can click. I'm trying to think about how to it's all about maximization. It's like, this is World of Warcraft. I'm maximizing things.
Okay, that's a great... No, that's right. You're spot on. I want to dumb it down massively. That's
like big view picture. It's like, this is the game. I'm going to maximize the limitations in this game.
I want to dumb it down even more, dude. Okay. I want to fucking dumb it down as possible as...
All right. Here we go.
Let's say... I'm going to assume this guy isn't a master. He hasn't like achieved like mastery in like anything. Like, I'm assuming it's like some young... kid, right? Young
whippersnapper.
Yeah, young whippersnapper. He's early in life. He hasn't like had the time to actually pursue mastery, right? You know, what's something he would know really well, all right? So well that he wouldn't even have to think. Okay. Okay, how do you get from your bedroom to the kitchen? Like, you know when you're going from the bedroom to the kitchen, the most efficient way, right?
Yeah.
You like would know exactly how to get to the bedroom to the kitchen. Like, and my point being is that you could do that blindfolded in the middle of the night, fucking thinking about whatever on the phone with a cup of coffee and a phone in one hand. You could do it backwards. You could do it in any way, shape, or form. That's the level you would have to get to in League. That same level of mastery. You do it. You can do it not thinking to a really high level.
Isn't that way easier to learn than League?
Yeah, obviously that is a simple. It's an oversimplification, but that is the level. Like, so you're not having to think at all. But
that's
doing
where you
got
to get to. I say
that's where you got to get to. Yeah. You got to know exactly what's going to happen, why it's going to happen, and how you what you need to do and why at every single point in time. That is Challenger level gameplay, and that's what Challenger level League is. It is pure anticipation. There's no, like, nothing confuses you. Everything makes sense, and you're just letting your intuition basically just
take over.
Yep. That's what pure, real, high quality. You're just, there's the information in front of me. I see that, and therefore this plus this equals this response. This plus this equals that response with no delay, basically.
Yeah,
very minimal delay.
You know the highest value play.
Yes, every
time. Every time, basically.
Without having to think. You don't have to like pause it and figure it out. It's like, well, I based off these people being fed, these people being weak, I'm this champion, they're that champion, this is where I should go, and I know exactly why, and I know after I go that, I should do this, and I know how to execute it perfectly without even thinking. That's challenger level league.
Yes, that's where I guess where you want to work towards.
You're not thinking, you're just letting your muscle memory take over.
Hmm.
That's how you are one with the game. You know, we talk about
Formula One.
We talk about the idea that you become one with your champ.
Yep,
you are the champion.
Yes.
That is like not even a stretch. You are the champion. That's the level you need to be. When Nathan's playing Rek'Sai, he knows exactly what Rek'Sai wants in those games. He may not execute it perfectly, but
I have no idea.
Yeah, you know what good execution would look like.
I know what bad execution looks like probably more often than good execution at this point. All right. The other thing I want to point out here, Curtis, is he says I understand that game quality is much more important than game quantity. My answer to that is no, both are incredibly important. Yep. You know, that's really interesting.
It's like working hard and smart. Both. Yeah, you need to work hard and smart. Yeah.
There's no challenger player in the world that has gone to challenge with like 1,000 games. No. Doesn't exist. No.
It's impossible.
Yeah. All right. So I really struggled with this question, Curtis. I think you had a much better in answer than I did. I just thought it was really interesting. Like, this is like a question that gets asked.
Mm.
And just sort of I didn't even have an answer to this question. I was just thinking, how would this question look in other industries, other fields? Just sort of understanding just the extent of what it means.
Mm.
What does challenger mean in League of Legends? It's insanely difficult. It's not just like a video game.
Yeah, I mean, I could be delusional. I don't know. Maybe it's just a dumb question. He wasn't thinking of it like that. But that's how I interpreted the question.
All right. All right, do you want to go to Curtis Clips,
guys? Yep, getting to Curtis Clips. Let's get into the details, guys. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. Welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. Today, we have a very short tidbit. Now, this was an example from a review I did today with a Master Tier Syndra. And I thought this was a great example of how I also reviewed my own mistakes. And I think this is a misconception I see and a review, I guess, problem I've noticed, okay? So we're going to play it out. Essentially, side laning here, you know, really not that important. Gets engaged upon by this Syndra, does a very nice little EQ combo. Jace hammer forms the range creeps. Goes back and then actually goes back in and takes a really good trade. Okay, that's all we're going to be looking at here. This little trade Okay, this interesting little trade.
Yep. So okay? 17 minutes in the game,
right? And so essentially, you know, when people review this in their own gameplay and they look at this, they'll think, oh, you know, I just mistethered. I made him as what? Like I this is a micro mistake.
Mm.
You know, I walked up when I shouldn't have walked up. You know, I got out tethered. I got out microed. Okay, this is the common response. And I'm just playing it out a few times so people can really look at this. I got out microed. I got out tethered. And so when I look at this, it can look like a out micro thing or an out played or whatever the hell you want to call it. People write this off I need to tether better or I need to click closer to my character or I need to blah, 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 whatever. At the end of the day, this decision, Syndra's decision to turn back here after Jace had used that hammer form Q on the range creeps to go for that Q, comes from a place of not being able to anticipate what Jace's trading patterns actually are. This actually comes from a misunderstanding about Jace as a champion. And what I've noticed with a lot of people in their reviews and when they look at trading patterns, they're looking at it too surface level.
It's binary. It's like they use ability. My auto response is to use my abilities now.
Yeah. And they're looking at it through the lens of, oh, this is a tether. I'm so bad mechanically. I'm mistethering. I'm missing my skill shots. Honestly, like I would say straight up 85% of mechanical misplays are from a lack of anticipation or a lack of understanding how the enemy champion fundamentally works. Okay, so in League, our decisions and the way we trade come from, number one, you don't understand what you want and your champion and all that. That's a given, right? That's a given. You need to also understand what their kit does and how their kit functions. But then the third piece, what is that guy trying to do with their trading patterns? Like, what are they trying to achieve? How does their kit fundamentally work together? Like, because you can understand abilities in isolation. You can understand, oh, there's the Jace Q and there's his Hammer Form Q and blah, blah. You can understand what their kit does. That doesn't mean you understand how it actually works together.
How to play out with Capable the Champion, how they use the kit.
Yes. How is the kit joined together and what are they trying to achieve? And I got very specific. I'm like, let's get fucking granular and let's actually look at what Jace is trying to do from Jace's, and this is what I recommend in the review. Look at it from the enemy's perspective. So if we're Jace here, Jace knows you're in the isolated 1v1. Jace is two levels up, but more importantly has phase rush with a tankier setup here, with actually a gore drink of phase rush Jace.
Really,
right?
Tanky, yeah.
So in this situation, he goes for the hammer Q and he still hasn't got his phase rush proc'd. So he's turning back, never with the intention to actually run back. He knows that he's still got phase rush available. He knows that you don't have E. So of course, in this situation, Jace is actually going to turn around and go for the autos there to proc the phase rush and then run away. Right? It makes total sense when you look at it from Jace's perspective. Mm. So the learning from this, although on the surface level you could look at it as from through that micro lens, it's actually a gap in your knowledge and a lack of anticipation, a lack of understanding how the Jace wants to trade and why the Jace wants to trade that way. Mm. That is the learning. Mm. I want to make that very important key distinction here. This is not a micro learning. This is just straight up a gap in knowledge.
Because you could easily say, I just got to hit my Q here or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. I just got to hit my, I'm missing my Qs. I'm, yeah. You know,
it's a really good point.
I'm walking up without my E. That's the problem, guys. No, why are you walking up without your E? Why are you going there to miss your Q? This is a very different thing to just miss execution. This is not miss execution. What you were trying to execute was fundamentally wrong in the first place. Miss execution means you had the right idea. It's the right play, but you fucked it up. You misclicked or whatever. That is different to this. This same idea, this is another interesting idea that flows on from this, which is people look at skill shots and they think, I messed up my skill shot. That's why we lost the fight. A lot of the time, when you look at skill shots, you need to ask yourself, is this skill shot on me to hit or them to dodge? If you are on plain sight, they know where you are, they're not CC'd, most of the time, it's on them to dodge. It's not on you to hit. So then the question should be, well, this means if I'm having to like hit this really like low percentage skill shot, is this even the right fight to take in the first place? And that comes from the same place in the review. It's like, well, yeah, you can look at it at a micro service level, or you can kind of think big picture about the situation. So just this is more of like a tidbit and more of a warning for you guys in your reviews. Don't be afraid of a learning being like, oh, interesting, that's how that champ works, or oh, interesting, yeah, if I'm Jace, I guess that would make sense. And that's filling in our gap, and that's building our understanding of the game, and this is what will lead to better quality ability usage in the future and better quality tethering, because you'll know what to anticipate, because League is 95% anticipation.
Love it. Yeah, people are really bad at looking at the enemy team's perspective.
They are.
Or the enemy's perspective. I learned so much more about that than my own. Maybe that's kind of the current level. Mm. I mean, when you start off, you need to know what you want.
Yep.
You know, that is the baseline. So, you know, if you're bronze, silver, gold, you know, you got to learn what you want first, and then to get to the next level, then the next step
that's
is
right.
Knowing what everyone else wants.
Yeah, if you're in the very low elo brackets, you probably don't even understand what you want and how your kit works, let alone you won't even have the mental capacity to even think about the enemy champion. So yeah, of course, this is like later on, I'll say this is more platinum plus, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. I think it's a very, very important. And this is how you develop as a mid laner and laners, true matchup understanding, and also skirmishing, by the way. Skirmishing improvement comes from looking at the game from other people's lenses. That is better. That is how you get good quality skirmishing. Like, sure, there is the aspect of, okay, I've got to know how to use my abilities well and how my champion wants to fight, and you tick all those boxes. But again, good quality skirmishing, consistent good quality skirmishing comes from understanding, again, what all the champs on my team want to do and why they're doing it and what the enemy champs want to do. Anyway, but that's long term. This is what the process is. We're just filling in these gaps. In my mind, the way I think about League is that there's like a million of these. And we're just ticking one off. You know, I might actually learn 10 in one game.
It's like, this is interesting.
Yeah, tick 10 there, 10 there. And then over a week, I tick off like maybe 300 situations. And you just do that for years. That's really what it is.
That's right. Love it. All right, mailbag time.
Yep.
Away we go.
Jingle, jingle, jingle song.
All righty then. Our first question here comes from Emmerfish. Title of this email is Death Spiral. Hello, Mr. Curtis and Mr. Mott. My name is Emperfish. I'm a jungler on the NA server. For context, I started my journey at the very end of Season 11, around when Arcane came out. I'm a Vi 1 trick mostly. I usually rotate some meta AP and some AD junglers in and out of my pool and pick them as needed. I was quite happy to finish the first split of Season 13 at Diamond 2, a rank I achieved and then maintained for about 100 games. That's crazy.
Wait, so first season, season 11. He's saying 11.
The very end of season 11.
Diamond 2.
And now he's Diamond 2. In like, yeah.
Oh, so he wasn't Diamond 2 in the first season.
No.
Now he's Diamond 2.
No, he was Diamond 2. About so it's 2 years.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy.
Impressive.
I wonder what the gaming background is there. You know, is that, yeah. is that are you are high rank in another game? That's typically the case for these yeah, really quick climbs.
Definitely.
With Vi receiving several round of nerfs, she now sits at the lowest win rate jungle in the game in Diamond Plus. I wanted to hit Masters this season, so I had to switch to Kindred as my main, with Lilia and J4 as my secondary picks, but something has gone horribly wrong. Jungling just feels foreign to me now. These are three of my better champs, and I thought my level of mastery on them was pretty high. Somehow, I just feel slow and confused every game. I'm down hundreds of LP in the... hundreds of LP, and I'm still getting stomped by players far below where I was comfortable just a couple of months ago. What do I do about this extreme mental baggage? Should I just accept that I'm going nowhere this split and play Vi? I'm still playing my secondary role in my second account and having fun with it, but I can't bring myself to finish a three block on my main anymore. I'm considering role swapping and just playing Garen mid and top. With Garen, I have clear reference points, and I feel like every game I play makes sense, but jungle never feels that way anymore. P.S. Wouldn't you think J4 and Vi would have similar reference points? I thought the two were similar, with J4 being a little stronger early game and at level 2, but even on J4, I can't make sense of the games of League that I'm playing. Now, this is super interesting, because we initially said, wow, what a surprise, Diamond 2. Now we're seeing, I think, here, the rest of this comment. I think it's just really an experience with the game still. That's my first reaction. What do you think about that, Curtis? Because what I'm seeing here is that you weren't really playing the game or jungle, you're playing Vi. Vi has been brutally destroyed by nerfs because of the pro play. I haven't really seen that much outside of like Wukong. And I have recommended people to drop these champions in like my especially for a lot of play. I had like three or four members that got to Diamond playing Vi. Now in Emerald, and we just had to say we just got to drop.
Oh, really? Is that bad?
It's really, oh, wow. it's really bad. Okay. Not recommendation.
Well, I think the first thing we got to bring to the surface is that, you know, it seems like they had a lot of mastery with Vi, and they learnt the game and climbed with Vi.
That's right.
And as soon as Vi got, you know, put to the curb, you know. There's a combination of obviously, you know, playing a champion that maybe isn't, these champs like Kindred, Jarvan and stuff maybe aren't as strong as Vi was when you made that initial climb, but also you just don't have the champ mastery. And even though J4 has a similar identity, it's just a very different kit.
Yeah.
It is just different. The way it fights is just very, very different.
Every champ in the game fights differently. Yeah. You know, like even different type of assassins and stuff. Yeah. Like, you know, like,
the damage comes from different places.
Sometimes people ask me, like, what's a champion similar to this? And I just say, they're not really.
Well, they
that
can have similar identities, yeah, but you still need to learn all the intricacies.
Yeah, you can't just expect you're just going to pick
that's
it
right
up.
That's right. Like, I mean, the only, like, the way you should view it is, like, what style do you like? You should play champs with a similar style. I think playing a champ like Jarvan is fine.
Yeah.
Just means you got to, but view Jarvan like a clean slate.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't have any expectations,
no expectations
about,
that's right,
how good you will be, maybe, with Vi. But especially Kindred, like, far
that's
out,
completely,
that's
different,
like a 180. Yeah. You know, complete 180.
You are going to be hundreds of LP below. Like,
that makes sense.
Basically, what I'm trying to say to you here, Emmerfish, is that, it's, I think we understand. Like, it makes sense. Don't be
confused.
Don't be confused by this, and just accept where your level is at, and just say, I was a Vi 1 trick. Because again, if you're a Vi 1 trick, and you've only been playing this long, that means you've spent so much time. You actually haven't learned anything really else about the game. Like, you're still, again, you know, people might say, crazy, how is Nathan calling him an inexperienced player? He is still inexperienced in terms of like a more complete player that understands every role, every champion, all that sort of stuff. I'm not saying to go play all these, but you just haven't got those same reps in the same, maybe a Diamond 2 player, the same rank, but can play multiple different champions, potentially the same rank as you because they have a bit more experience, you know? And it's fine. It just depends on your journey. But you got to accept if you're playing a different champion, it's going to be, you know, take some time to pick
exactly. If someone were to climb to Diamond 2 with a diverse champion of three junglers, they would be a very different caliber of Diamond 2 player.
That's right.
This is what tied into our earlier discussion. You can have two people at the same rank, but got there very, very different ways. But yeah, I think you're spot on, Nathan, with what you said there. You need to, and again, easier said than done. This seems to be the catchphrase of this episode, but you got to really come to terms with your level of play and just accept where you're at. You might be a Platinum 4 Jarvan or Emerald 4 Jarvan. If you're an Emerald 4 Jarvan, that is. It is what it is. Don't come in with any preconceived notion about what rank you should or shouldn't be. And even though that sounds ridiculous, because you might say, Curtis, I was in fact a Diamond 2 Vi. Well, yep, you were, right? The game has changed, the champs have nerfed, things coming in out of meta. You know, that champion probably bypassed some fundamentals that you weren't able to learn through Vi. And the reality of the situation is that you're not, you know, near the level of play you were before with Vi. So what are you going to do? You got to buckle down, dig into the champ mastery, get into the details, start to pursue with the same obsession you had with Vi, with your Jarvan and with your Kindred.
And relax. Take your time. Yes, you're relax. A very young
very,
player.
Very, very new.
Take your time. Respect the process and
have fun with it. Try to, like, again, you should be having fun this early on in your journey. Really try to get into those details. Get specific. Like, I think what it sounds like as well, Nathan, the vibe I get is like, he says everything feels like he's lost. It feels like he'd bring it back to what are your key reference points? What makes a good gank and a bad gank? Go back to your jungle clears. It's the basics of jungle.
That's right.
And don't think about winning. Don't think about winning the game. Think about just having a solid first clear. First two clears. A first good gank. Stuff like that, just like basic stuff that will give you consistency, right, in the first 8 minutes of the game.
Love it. We've got Jungle Coach here. That's Curtis, talking about the first what's good gank?
Yes, Salty Coach now.
That's right. Good gank.
I just heard you say that a trillion times, and it's just ingrained in my memory.
Yes, the first gank is very important for dictating the flow of the game as a jungler. All right, our next question here comes from Hara from the MLA. Title of this email is Singing Coaching versus League Coaching. Hello, Nathan and Curtis. Hara from the MLA here. I have been starting to take singing lessons in an attempt to sing in a choir that will sing Mozart's Requiem this year, famous one-hour-long choir piece. I found my teacher through her scuffed website, and her credentials are amazing. 15 years of music education through Denmark, Germany, and New York, singing professionally for 20 years in every choir, opera, so on, and teaching all along the way. I love hearing that, by the way. All these, like, experienced people just have, like, scuffed, because they don't know sales at all.
Yeah.
They don't know marketing.
They're just really good at what
they're doing. They're really good at doing that. They just chuck something out, probably, like, they're, you know, someone just did for them on, like, you know, $20 Fiverr or something like that. You know what I mean? I will therefore have expected her to have a roadmap A to Z of all the exercises I should do and techniques I should learn. Bing, bang, done. But our first lesson was anything but that. We began with warm-ups, where she spotted how I should be taking better breaths, and she told me to think of how I would take a breath when looking over the ocean. It felt completely different. We then practiced that a little, and then she told me to forget it and sing the passage of the warm-up piece again without focusing too much on the breathing. Then she told me for the shorter breaths to imagine I was holding two heavy grocery bags. I felt my breath change again. Forget practice, new piece, new analogy. We went like this for the whole hour, going from saying Hakuna Matata, catching sounds with an M or ending with an H, using only vowels, floating voice, forgetting milk breath, Hong Kong singing, and I could go on. But we always brought it back to the specific song. At the end, I asked her what her most successful students had in common, and she simply said that they focus on the song at hand. It made sense. For all the crazy things we had done, it had always stemmed from her hearing something in how I sang, or that I asked how to get better at a specific thing in a specific passage. I went home with a bag full of tools to apply and train to the next session. Next session was the same thing, and I asked her about how I should specifically practice it at home. She just said that I should focus on doing something each day, and if I missed a day, it wasn't the end of the world. It would all come together in the end. We've had a couple of lessons now, and I am confident that I can bring any difficult passage and get 10 different ways to practice it until it clicks for me. I have also mentioned how I think it's funny how much of her practice is related to League. Though she had no idea what I was talking about, she just said that it's the only truly effective way she has found to teach singing. I hope you found this interesting. I'll see you in the review.
Wow, it's a lot to digest there.
So how will we summarize? What does this teaching method mean? So she always wanted to bring it back to the song. How do we relate to that?
Right. Well, I think the way I interpret that, I mean, I could be completely wrong here, was that people lose sight of what you're actually trying to do and they get caught up in the semantics.
Yes.
So it's like, we can look at, how you specifically do that word or, but don't worry about that. We can practice that later. Let's just focus on singing the song. I think that's what they mean. So like, maybe bringing that back to League is like, okay, well, we can get caught up in, how to do
sexy stuff like wave management.
Yeah. But let's just,
It's important,
but let's just,
you got to bring it back to big picture.
Bring it back to big picture, like, dealing damage and being at the fights or whatever it might be.
Playing your champion well.
Playing your champ well, yeah. I mean, that's an interpretation. I will say the use of analogies is very important. I'm a massive advocate of that. In all our guides in the MLS, we have like a mindset thing. We talk about kind of like the mindset of the champ. I recently did the Nefiri one. And then the mindset of like a wolf and how like a wolf like hunts and packs, but then, is fast in their engages. And when they're weak and tired, they're not going to be able to, finish off people and stuff like that. Like I like getting across a mindset and getting people to feel what it's like or understand how to think as that champion. And I think analogies are just overpowered because it gets across, like, I actually could understand that. Like, I was thinking when you were reading that, what was the first one was, because I was actually trying to do it in my head. Like, oh, yeah, like, breathe as if you're looking over the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool. Like, that's you just get it. Like, you just get that. Like, you have something to latch onto.
You know what that feels, you have an idea of what that might feel like versus thinking, technically.
I think that ties into what I was saying before. Like, it's kind of like a big picture thing. It gives you something to latch onto. Because, like, imagine trying to describe how to take a breath properly without having, like, a North Star. You know what I mean? Like, at least you have, like, the way I view it is, like, when you're building a piece of like IKEA furniture, you're building a piece of furniture, you have like the frame and then you put in the small little screws and shit. You have like the big shit and then like the small little things come in later. Like that's the way I'm trying to view everything right now. You need to understand the baseline structure and then the small things kind of fit in later, which is again, like I said, with the
lean in.
Yeah. Like the big shit is the hitting your abilities, learning where your damage comes from, knowing when you're strong or weak. And then the small things are like, okay, the specifics of how to do that, like the wave management, the resets, and like, that's tying it back to that. It's like you in the jungle. It's like, okay, with Wukong, if we know how to just do a lot of damage with our combo, then we can tighten up all the rest later on. It's just tightening the screws, That's kind of the way I got that. It's like, okay, well, we've kind of got this way of viewing this, taking a breath at a high level, like as if you're breathing in the ocean, but then we can, okay, maybe you need to do that a little bit more or that a little bit more, I like that. I love that way of teaching. I think it's such an effective way to teach. And we're just realizing this shit now. Like, I mean, we fucking taught the wrong way probably for years.
The schematics, the little detail stuff, that's the sexy stuff. But I mean, it is sexy and we love it, but yeah, you need to bring it.
Yeah. And this is, again, we love to contradict ourselves on the podcast. We say, let's get into the details. Yeah. The details are equally important to the big picture. Again, the constant gray area that we're trying to get across. It's like, you need to do both. You need to understand what the fuck you're trying to do. And what I talk about, I call the zoom in, zoom out technique. You zoom in, you look at the small details, then you zoom out and you're like, okay, what am I trying to do? Why am I even here? What am I doing here? Like, why am I at this dragon? Is this even a good dragon fight? That is the best way to think about the game.
I love the word, the bag of tools. I love just tools. I don't know if she used that word, the teacher, but Tools to go away and then apply. You know, those little tools, like, you know, dealing with lost streaks and you know, thinking about how you can think about your champion and dealing with certain situations in the game.
Yeah, and I will say, though, like, I think with a lot of these skills, you know, I think the teaching is very interesting, but we always got to remember that, you know, we just don't have drilling like they do.
No.
You know, that's the number one advantage a lot of these crafts have, and these skills that they can just go ahead and just drill. You can sit there in your room and drill one specific element for so long, as long as you possibly want.
It's a huge luxury in the
game. It's a massive luxury.
As we've seen as well with chess, right?
Yeah. Again, not to take away from the difficulty of the skill, incredibly difficult, but it's just like that is one of the advantages these, and what makes League a little bit trickier in terms of learning it specifically.
All right, next question comes from Vincent. The title is EMOs, am I actually Challenger or did I peak at the right time? Hey guys, I hit Challenger right before Split 1 ended, but did not maintain it due to a big losing streak. I started one trick in Talon mid, and before I knew it, I got to Grandmaster and thought I had a shot at actually hitting Challenger. So I played a couple of games each day, fully focused, and managed to reach Challenger 950 LP with 65% win rates. However, after this, I still needed a couple more games because the season was ending in like 19 days, but I only had 14 games banked up. I ended up dropping about 200 LP and lost all my confidence and started wondering whether I was actually a Challenger level player or if I got a lucky win streak up there. After the split ended, I ended up taking a break and have yet to start back up playing seriously because of a loss in confidence, I suppose. He sent us his OPGG as well, so he isn't playing at all this split. And he ended up finishing Grandmaster there. Let's take a look at his...
Well, look. How many games was it that he played in the first split?
He played literally just one trick talent, about 170 games.
Well... Okay. Okay. So I think we need to first say that lucky streaks can happen, but I think there's a lot that goes into that. I think that you could have also been playing with a lot of confidence, right? I do think there's something to be said with just things click, the stars align. That also then makes you play maybe a little bit better because you're feeling yourself. You're playing with confidence. You're not hesitating. You're not thinking too much. You're just go, 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 execute. So there could have been some lucky games in there, and that definitely can happen. But over that sample size, I think it's unlikely that there was luck. I think it was more so that you were playing great League of Legends. Yes, maybe some things went your way, but for the most part, you're probably playing truly at your level, maybe even a little bit above your level because of the confidence that you had, you know. So I think there's that. And as soon as you're aware, and you're again, it ties into that thing. He was aware now of his rank. He's now thinking about the rank instead of just expressing his best self.
Yeah.
The more aware you become of the rank, and the more aware you are of just the wins and losses and the LP and all that crap,
you drop. You
there's more hesitation. It's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't go for that play because if I go for that play, then I might fail that dive. Or, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't. You know, go for this trade because if I mess this up, then I lose my lead or, you know, stuff like that. It's like, what if, you know, what if I do that? And that just sends you down a really, really nasty path. And especially with a champ like Talon, where if you have any sort of hesitation or doubt, you're going to fuck it up. And then, you know, Talon from behind is definitely not good. So anything else you would add to that? What else would you say?
I mean, even just like the question itself, it's like, am I a Challenger level player? It's like, well, you know, you played there for a little bit, you know. I mean, the answer is really no. Like, I mean, a Challenger level player in my eyes is someone who's consistently maintaining Challenger for a long period of time. You know, he does not play. This OPGG is really, in a way, a little bit concerning. Like, it's just a straight up new account. Like, he only played 160 games right. Talon last, but that's it.
Yep.
He's only played one season on this account. I don't know what his journey looks like or anything like that. You know, who cares? Just have fun with your Challenger player or Grandmaster player. That's not what's exciting about the game to me. Like, the rank, yeah, cool. It's an awesome thing to brag about. Awesome. You know, achievement. Challenge is obviously achievement. But the moment you start thinking this way, the game becomes so boring to me. It does. You know?
I think you raise a really good point, Nathan. And I think that if you are, the only, like, a true Challenger player is consistently playing in Challenger. That is what a true Challenger player is. Doesn't mean you're not for that moment you were in challenger. We're not discrediting that you weren't a challenger player for that brief moment in time. But if you want to be a true challenger player, you're going to be there for a long period of time, multiple seasons, playing consistently in challenger level games versus other challenger level players. That is a true challenger level player. And you know it. Like, that person knows it.
You do know
you
it.
You just know it.
You know what you're, how you're
if
playing.
If you have to ask that question, you already know you're not. Yeah. Like, you either know it or you don't.
Yeah.
Right? There's no challenger player that is questioning their challenger ability. Like,
There could be. There's delusional people out there, Curtis, that are touching on their test rank, thinking, I am the challenger player. Well, in Grandmaster because my team suck. Or
whatever, I'm saying is that there is no challenger player that is, like, the people that are in challenger that are questioning their ability, if they really are a challenger player, won't be there for very long. Right, that's correct. My point.
Yeah,
the true challenger players will basically always end up there and be there, and they won't question it because they know what challenger level gameplay looks like.
Yeah.
And that's it. You either know what it looks like or you don't. Hmm. I know very clearly why right now I'm not challenger. Absolutely. I know exactly the difference of what makes a challenger player and what doesn't.
Yep. I had to say to one of my clients who has peaked challenger in the past, and he has been having a mental breakdown in master and stuff like that. And he, on his Twitter and everything, he called himself a challenger player and he had challenger pop up. I said, remove all that shit. Once he did, he felt way more free. Like, you know, and it's like, and then we're just, it's just so bad to just be attached to the rank and like your previous rank and stuff like that. I wouldn't call myself a challenger player right now. I've been challenger a couple of times already this split, but I've been down to grandmaster and I just know my gameplay. You just know. It's really shit, you know.
Everyone just
knows. It's
just
not where I want it to be.
You just know. You know? And when you verse a true challenger player, you know straight away. There's no question.
The
there's
speed,
no doubt.
The tempo, the
it's like, fuck, they're better than me. And that's I know right. exactly what they're doing better than me. And that's it. I got to get better.
That's right. You got to get better.
Super simple. So I agree. I think it's a pretty poor quality question. I think it's telling of your mentality. So I think Nathan's right. The question, whether or not we can answer it, doesn't matter. The real problem there is that you're not really asking the good quality questions like, okay, what does challenger level talent gameplay look like? And what is the difference between me and a consistent challenger talent player? What are they doing differently to me? What do I need to be doing better specifically to be a consistent challenger player? They're the questions you need to be asking.
Love it. Love high quality questions.
Yep.
All right, that's it for episode today, Curtis. Good work. Let's keep on improving.
No more delusion. Get into the details.
Get into the details.
Accepting reality.
Curtis is going to go and accept reality.
Love accepting reality.
In his games this week. And
yep.
I don't have anything else to say. You know, the last couple of weeks, Curtis, I've been saying, oh my God, there's only 9 days left to split, but now we found out from right this week
that we've got a long split, Nathan. We've got it for the long haul.
4 months, 5 months, I guess.
Wow.
So, good work, guys.
Plenty of time to get rank one, Nathan.
The pressure's on. rank ones aren't even on the cards until I can get my shit sorted in Grandmaster at the moment, Curtis, all right? We'll see you guys next week.